Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It is the Take Command podcast. It is also the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Craig Hoffman, the host of Take Command, our Odyssey Sports podcast on the Commanders. And it's my pleasure to be here with Zach Clark, with the co-host, of course, of the Detroit Football Network podcast. Half the audience, Zach, already knew one half of that. Half the audience knew the other half. But time to talk a little playoff football between Washington and Detroit. Who would have thought, Zach? Who would have thought?
I'll tell you what, the Commanders have had one of the most exciting seasons that I can remember. And certainly the Lions season has been exciting, but and I can't believe I'm going to say this, it's gone as almost as expected. There's been some hiccups, but we expected the Lions to be a really good football team this year, and they have been. The Commanders have been just thrilling in the way that they've won football games. You know, as a Detroiter and an NFC North member, watching them humiliate the Bears was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. I'd love to see it over and over and over again. So I'm excited for an opportunity to see them up close and personal. I've watched, but now I'm going to experience. I'm looking forward to it.
I chuckled pretty hard the other day. I was listening to the Athletic Football Show, and my guy Robert Mays, who's obviously a Bears fan, for those that don't know, and he's just like, man, every time the Commanders play, I'm having fun, I'm watching them, and then they have to show the flashback to the Hail Mary, and I'm like, how did I get roped into this? And, you know, also, Zach, you probably don't know this, but I had quite the back and forth with Bears fans that week. They were obnoxious and terrible all week long, and so the amount of pettiness I had after that game was unseen in the history of this show otherwise. So,
how satisfying was that for you, though? I had to feel so good.
Amazing.
Especially the way and especially with the, I can't think of the guy's name, but he was taunting the crowd. He's in the wrong spot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, yes.
It's amazing. It was amazing. It was so good. I was in the building. It was amazing. Fantastic. Before we get to this game, just real quick, I think I'd be remiss to not ask you about kind of how Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes and everybody in Detroit has built this, because I think Detroit is the model in many ways for Washington in terms of how they're going about this. Now, there are some key differences. Obviously, in Detroit, you guys with the veteran quarterback route, you trade Stafford, get Goff. That works out tremendously. This roster is outstanding. For Washington, they're in year one of what we hope to be an eventual outstanding roster, but a lot of this is quarterback powered because they had the rookie kind of more traditional way to build it from in-house. But in terms of implementing a play style, a culture, a way of going about your business, at what point during the Dan Campbell Brad Holmes build did you guys kind of go, oh, like a lot of coaches say this stuff, they're about it and it's working? Because obviously it didn't start great, that 3-13 first season, but I think, and then Hard Knocks happens and everyone's all excited, that season starts bad but ends amazing, and they've basically been the best team in football for 2.5 years at this point. So like, what are some of the things that you remember early on in that build latching on to, being like, you know, they may be onto something here?
I think one of the first things is that Dan Campbell embraced the environment of the city and the team and its communal feel immediately. He bought in, he realized, and he'd played here before. I think that was something that people don't forget but need to realize. In fact, he was on the 0-16 team. So he knows what this is like. He knows what the depths of despair have been. I do think Hard Knocks was the biggest light bulb moment, even for us in Detroit, because even here, we don't get that kind of access that Hard Knocks gets, right? And so I think that was a big one. And also, that felt nice for us. And this is going to sound odd, but, you know, we're in Detroit. Other people are like, oh, that looks nice. And we're like, yes, it is nice. Look at this. I think the most important thing, though, Craig, is, especially with the last regime, We were always trying to be somebody else. We should do what the Patriots do. We should do what somebody else does. Brad and Dan have done what they do. It's their own model that they've created for themselves. I'm not trying to shoehorn something else in. And I think a lot of that credit goes to Sheila Ford Hamp. I don't know what made Mrs. Ford hand it over, but Sheila made some really astute personnel choices, starting with Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, and it just has paid off. And the other thing with the Lions, I mean, we can go down a laundry list of draft picks that have not worked out very well, but not in the last 3 years. They've almost all worked out spectacularly, and some of them even better than you could think of. And so I just think from the foundation up, watching a consistent build, living in your own environment, being who you are and embracing it the whole time and not wavering. I mean, I know most football coaches say, well, you know, we don't listen to that, or the media says this. You know, the Lions have taken a lot of criticism for some of the things they've done, not in a super crazy way, but a lot of the aggressiveness, right? Some of the things Dan Campbell said early on gave people the impression that he wasn't very smart. And I think that's a miscalculation on a lot of people's part that has gone away. I can't think of a time when the Lions had coaches in demand. No coach in the Lions history, head coach, has ever coached ever again. Think about
that.
Wow. No Lions head coach has ever been a head coach ever again.
Wow.
The head coach. Insane. And now they're coming after our assistants, which is annoying, but it's also like, we've arrived.
Right. Those are champagne problems. The other thing that you talk about, Dan Campbell's intelligence, I think the thing that comes across in Hard Knocks is there's an emotional intelligence there, the way he connects with people. And that's something that DQ has. And, you know, as we're going through the process of hiring a coach last year, I'm fortunate enough that the co-host of apparently on this show, I only talk with very bearded men because Logan Paulson played for Dan in Atlanta. And he's like, Dan is just different. Like the way he's my favorite head coach I ever played for. And like Logan played for Kyle and loves Kyle Shanahan, thinks he's a genius, and you know who wouldn't? And you know those two had a great relationship, and I, as far as I know, still have a good one. But like the way Logan talked about Dan and the way he operated the program, I was like, I'm kind of intrigued by this as someone who looks into the psychological stuff quite a bit, and I think that has been a really cool thing. And I think there's something that's mirrored there too between the two Dans, is there's both an emotional intelligence and connection and brotherhood with also a toughness, because sometimes those two things get kind of conflated on opposite sides of like, you can't be emotionally in touch and like tough and masculine. It's like, no, that's actually the most tough way you can be, is that you are vulnerable and you are connected to the people next to you. And it's the best of sports. It's what it's all about. And I think there are arguably no two franchises that do that better than what Detroit has been doing the last 3 years, and then what Washington did this year in a pretty remarkable way. And that then allows you to play better on the field and implement the play style and all those things. And I don't want to go too much high level here. I want to get into the game. So I'll just wrap with this. My favorite quote, perhaps of any coach I've heard in the last 5 years, is from Campbell earlier this season, where in one of the post-game locker rooms, he goes, "It doesn't matter who puts on our uniform. Like, we are who we are," is basically the crux of it. And that's not how the NFL is supposed to work. It's supposed to be a talent league. But the fact that they have been able to, no matter who has come through that building with all the injuries that they've had on defense, be the same team and implement that play style, play with the same physicality, not change their calls. They just get guys up to speed and say, "You're a Lion. Here's the jersey. This is how we do." And then they go get down. I think that is remarkable and is a huge reason why they're the number one seed and favored by double digits on divisional weekend against a very good Washington team.
Yeah. And just to put a bow on that, we were talking to the great Doc Walker last night, and he called Dan and Dan cousins. And I just love it. I love that, because I do feel that way. Everything that you said is true. And I just think, and this is not a patronizing pat you on the head thing, but we're just you in the future. I really believe
right. That. No, I totally agree with that. 100%. All right, let's get into the game. Let's get into the X's and O's of it all. As you guys get to your game preview this week, we're recording this on Wednesday morning. Logan and I will do our big, giant X's and O's. Logan's watched way too much tape film review on Thursday. But I certainly have some big topics, that things that I think are going to be important. What's the number one thing for you, though, that you think determines the outcome of this game on Saturday night?
You know, I think the easy thing is to say the defense, because that's what struggled so much. But the Lions, and their run game and how David Montgomery folds back in and how the Commanders deal with that is going to be wildly interesting. Because, and I think that's true for Lions fans too, because all season long, it's been a 50-50 split. Gibbs, Montgomery, Montgomery, Gibbs, Gibbs, Montgomery. Their carries are almost identical until a couple of weeks ago. Jahmyr Gibbs on his own has been fantastic. NFC Player of the Week, NFC Player of the Month to end the season. He's been spectacular. How does that work with Montgomery coming back? I don't worry about an ego thing. I just worry about a game plan thing. They had a system. The system gets upset. Things don't change much productivity-wise. So how do you go back to that? And that's the first thing I'll be looking at.
Yeah, I think that plays into my number one thing, which is what is the game script? What is it that actually, like, how does this game play out? Because there's ways, and a lot of them, if you think of it like the NBA draft lottery, there's 1,000 combinations, and there's a lot of ping pong ball combinations, unfortunately, on our side of it, that end with Detroit winning by a lot, because their offense is so potent. The good news for Washington, though, is the game script they just played against Tampa is how they win this game. Can they control the ball? And I think against Detroit, in some ways, it's easier because Tampa's run defense is very, very good. Running inside on them is almost impossible with the combination of speed of and quickness of Kalijah Kansi, power of Vita Vea. And Detroit, thanks to a lot of injuries, as tough and as physical as they play, you can run on them a little bit. Problem is a lot of teams don't get the opportunity to because their offense is so good that they're up by a million points by the second quarter, and then they're goodbye to your running game. So to me, but what you just said of can Detroit control the ball, shorten the game, then Washington's kind of looking to do the same thing. I really do wonder about kind of this game script because I think a lot of people expect a 40 to 30 type of game. And I just don't know if there's going to be enough possessions to actually have a 40 to 30 type game.
And I see why people would think that. The Lions are at their best when they win the toss and eat up like an 8 minute drive on the ground. It puts the opposition on their heels, especially when you're at home. And then at that point, if you can't be successful immediately, the crowd goes nuts and you're only down 7-0, but you're in it deep. And so I do think that ball control is where this game is won and lost. And I do, you're right. The over-under in that Minnesota game, I was there at week 18. It was like 50-something, and it didn't get past 40 barely. And I think that's going to be a big part of it. Could this be a shootout? Absolutely. You were talking about ping pong balls. I think a good chunk of those ping pong balls landed a shootout, maybe in the second half. But I do think if both teams, whoever controls, and this is, I know, is light work, whoever controls the ball is going to have success. But in this situation, I think it means even more. And my second thing on that, I'm just so excited and curious to see how Jaden Daniels commands this Commanders offense and what that looks like in a playoff situation where he's on the road again. That's the thing. People say, well, you know, young kid, can't trust rookie quarterback. Sure. Are you sure? Because, I mean, he looked pretty good last week, and now, brimming with confidence.
He's not young, though, for a rookie. That's the thing. Like, he's 24 years old. Like, he's very experienced. He played way more games in college than most guys did. And, like, I don't think there's a lot of stuff that transfers, you know, in terms of difficulty level from college to the NFL. But when it comes to communicating and it comes to all these things, like, Saturday night in Tuscaloosa or Saturday night in the Swamp down in Gainesville, like, that's... Y'all's crowd is maybe the best in the NFL. Like, Detroit's insane. But I don't know how much more... Like, it's a 10 compared to the 10 of Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. Like, he's been in that atmosphere before.
And I think that is one of the things that makes him so dangerous is he's got this calmness about him, even in these hyper situations. But as soon as the ball is snapped, the calm kind of translates into this, like, electricity. And I'll tell you what, I am... I wish the Lions defense was healthier for 1,000 reasons, but I would love to see him against a full strength Lions defense because I think it would still be impressive. And I'll be very curious to see how the Lions work in their secondary because that has had to have been, it was their weakness early on last season, certainly. And you know, this year was not their strength because of how good the front was, but then, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks in, the front dissolves and, you know, Joseph and Branch have been great. Amik Robertson's played a lot better. So be curious to see how that works out.
Yeah, the Amik Robertson thing, I mean, what he did to JJ in week 18 was pretty wild.
I do think some of that, though, I'll be careful. Well,
they've known each other since high school.
And there's a chip there, right? Because they're both from Louisiana. One went to LSU, one went to La Tech. They're not the same, right? And so I think there was a personal element to it. But you said something a lot earlier. Everything's personal for these guys. I think that's true across the board in the NFL. But that emotional buy-in that they have with each other, everything is a slight. Everything is disrespectful. And they look what they did to the Cowboys. You know, how many times did the offensive lineman throw a pass in that game? Three times?
Yeah.
What happened the year before that? They remembered.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's interesting because, I mean, talk about personal slights, like what Amon-Ra St. Brown has said about De'Ami Brown, and I get it from Amon-Ra's perspective, and he's been the far better player, but De'Ami all of a sudden, like, he's having the best year of his career, arguably just had the best game of his career. Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, Terry McLaurin is always feeling slighted when he gets out on the field. He's like, watch me, I'm a third round pick, and people don't think I'm that good because my quarterbacks have been a circus, you know, carousel of nothingness until this year. Now look at me go. So I think there's a lot of that. And because of the way the Lions play schematically, they play a ton of man-to-man, like there's opportunities for those guys to make plays when teams get the Lions defensively, like the offenses that have had good games against Detroit, even though often Detroit's offense has been able to you know, just raise the bar to a level that they can't get to. What are some of the ways they get got? Is it miscommunication, some of that man coverage? Is it big gashes in the run game? Like what is Washington going to be trying to take advantage of for Detroit?
I do think there is, and we'll see how he responds. Terrion Arnold is a lot of fun. He's going to be a very good player, but he gets got quite a bit. And some of that is he'll get burned, or instead of getting burned, he'll commit a penalty. And so he gets picked on quite a bit. But to me, the most frustrating thing has been, and last year it was much worse. The Lions at times, when they're off their game, struggle on third and medium ish in situations where you should be able to put people away. The drives are allowed to prolong themselves. It doesn't happen a ton, but when you asked when they get got, it is things like that. And there's been a lot of miscommunication, at least there was for a period when Alex Anzalone was out. But now that he's back quarterbacking the defense again, if you look at week 18, the coverage was better. And I think that's because he was out there sending signals. And that's no disrespect to what they've been doing when he was out, but his presence, Jack Campbell's been fantastic. He was wearing the green dot, but Alex Anzalone back last week showed up more than just in what he did. It's what others were able to do around him. You freeze up Branch a little bit. So I think, you know, that's something that's been buttoned up, but still the Lions are vulnerable defensively. It's just, it's their weakness, and it was not their strength going in. But certainly now, I mean, goodness.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting elements of that from a communication standpoint is the Washington no huddle. It's not necessarily hurry up, but what it does is it puts pressure on defenses to communicate without a huddle. You have to be able to get lined up quickly because even though they're subbing in and out and like you get your chance to match the substitutions and there's time, if they're on the ball, you have to be ready and you have to communicate. And Kliff does a really good job as an offensive coordinator, putting defenders in conflict. And whether that's with the RPO game or whether that is in the zone read game or whether that's with the route combinations and some kind of twists on some, I would say more standard NFL route concepts of we're just going to put a guy that looks like, you know, it looks like spot that you've seen 1,000 times in these West Coast offenses, but we put a little twist on it that guy, that linebacker, that DB, like he doesn't know what to do. And to get that stuff communicated and to be ready for it is a lot harder when you can't come together between every snap and the crowd's going to be loud as hell. And that, you know, Detroit's defense is used to dealing with that of like, hey, we're loud or our crowd is loud and behind us, but like we have to communicate through it. So I think that's a huge element. Last thing I want to ask you before we flip sides of the ball. And obviously if you have any questions back, fire away, but like how have they handled quarterbacks who scramble / mobile quarterbacks? Because Jaden is arguably outside of like he and Lamar are in a class on their own. They are 850-yard, you know, rushing quarterbacks, their slipperiness, the way that they get out of the pocket. Like they are just different. How have they handled mobile quarterbacks in general? And especially those that have a quarterback run element to them.
These are the things that keep people like me up at night. The Lions have over the last couple of years, the last several years really struggled. I mean, it has been a challenge this year though. They have been better. I think I don't want to call them undisciplined in the past, but in that specific sense of staying home and staying alert, they feel more disciplined this season. But that is going to be an issue. And the thing is, they've not seen a ton of them. And I'm not saying there are a ton of guys like Jaden Daniels, but I mean, look at Josh Allen. that he made things very, very difficult on the Detroit Lions. He had a day of days, but part of that was because of what he can do with his legs. So I do think that is, I do think that is a concern for the Lions. I think they see a ton, and something they certainly have, right? It's not something you can simulate. How do you simulate Jaden Daniels in practice, especially when Goff is your quarterback?
Yeah, good luck. You have to put like your fastest guy back there and pretend that every throw that he makes that is terrible actually was complete.
Right.
Be like, sorry, guys. Yeah. You have to know that that's a completion in the game. But you mentioned like some of those third and six, third and medium type of situations. Like, if you're going to play man coverage against Jaden Daniels without a spy, without anything, like, that's a tough ask, because if you cover everybody, he's going to take off. Your eyes are not on the quarterback. So a lot of teams wind up playing zone, or last week Tampa used spy, or I should say a spy, or sometimes they had two guys spying him, which was hilarious to watch. And that means you're short on the coverage, or you're short on the actual pass rush. Like, why is Tampa rushing three? They're the blitz happiest team in the league. Oh, because they have two spies sitting in the middle of the field on Jaden Daniels, covering no one, just making sure he doesn't run. And he's a good enough passer that that's not really a viable strategy either. And in some ways, like, this is why it's such a quarterback-driven sport. And again, we're going to talk about the Detroit offense here in a second. And I have more concerns about Washington's ability to stop Detroit's offense than I do Detroit figuring something out. But there is only, for a guy like Daniels who is good at everything, there's only so much you can do. You kind of have to hope he has a mediocre or bad day. And he hasn't had a lot of bad days. So now what that ultimately means in the red zone, and can you at least make that into field goals versus touchdowns? Like, there's, you know, can you limit the explosive plays? Like, if I'm Aaron Glenn this week, that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about, is like, hey, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to be us. But like, you know, Joseph Branch, like, if you're deep, like, you better stay deep and you better fade 17 side of it. Like, you better be over on McLaurin's side, because they're going to take their shots. Like, Kirby Joseph, go get you a pick. Just bait him into it, make him think he's all alone, like, then get over the top and go catch it. Like, those are the kinds of things that you're going to have to do to stop this Washington offense, just because that's what you have to do to stop this Washington offense. That's been one of the best this year, although not the best, because that's the Detroit side of it.
Yes. And I will say the Lions, they love to play man. So
yep.
It's going to be interesting. Before we flip, just let me ask you, though, because I've been thinking about this. There's been so much positive with Jaden Daniels. What does concern you? I mean, he's gone on the road. They've won close game after close game after close game. I mean, he's been the engine that makes this thing go, and it's just a ton of fun.
So the man coverage thing is a huge double-edged sword for me, because while Washington structurally does a lot of really smart stuff, and that opens up the quarterback run game because you don't have eyes on the quarterback, they don't have a lot of receiving talent. Like, they have a bunch of guys. Like, Olamide Zaccheaus is a fantastic zone receiver. He will sit down in the right spot and he will reliably catch the ball. And if you give him a little bit of space, like, he's good after the catch. He'll run through people. Is Olamide Zaccheaus going to beat a guy consistently one-on-one in man coverage? Probably not. Is De'Ami Brown going to beat someone consistently? Well, Terry? Hell yeah. Like, Terry's awesome. Zach Ertz, Logan has a phrase, he's just a master of the dark arts of route running. Like, he just knows how to get open. Yeah. So there's going to be those types of situations where, can you get Ertz on someone who's like an Anzalone as opposed to a Brian Branch, like a bigger, physical, more dexterous defender? So there's definitely some matchups that I think are interesting to watch. But my concern is that Jaden is stuck back there staring at a bunch of bad matchups, and he has to run around a lot. And Detroit has a plan for that, and they do a good job of containing him. Now, it's easier said than done, and it's probably not going to go perfect. He'll have some scrambles. And then the other thing is, like, their running game has been trash for the running back design running game has been trash basically since the Tennessee game, where they ran for 250 yards. And that was an anomaly because it was bad the 3 weeks before that. So can you, without the support of a run game, if it doesn't get going, put it all on Jaden again? History says, yeah, he's figured it out a ton, but like, that is a lot on any quarterback, especially when the bar is so high. Like, we're talking probably needing to score 30 plus. It's just a big ask. And, you know, can you do it without turning the ball over? All that kind of stuff. I think the high wire act is just very high. He's walked it. There are three games in NFL history where a team has had zero punts and zero turnovers behind a rookie quarterback, and they're all three Jaden Daniels games this season, I think, is the stat. So, yeah, it's just a very high wire act to have to actually pull off.
Well, and just to close it out, you look at Week 18, the Lions gave up a lot of red zone opportunity. Now, the Vikings didn't capitalize on that, so that's something else, too, where if he gets that kind of opportunity,
They're going to move the ball between the 20s. They move the ball between the 20s on everyone. The question is, can they? And then, you know, the kicking game has been a very up and down nightmare this year for Washington. And, you know, Gonzalez doinks them into the divisional round, as Mike Tirico aptly said on the broadcast. But, like, I don't want to kick a ton of field goals. And then the other thing is, like, we'll talk about this with the Lions as well. Like, this is a team that goes for it on fourth down a ton. They're the best fourth down team in the NFL in 25 years. Can they do that against Detroit? You know, how much Detroit's going to spend a ton of time on their fourth down, you know, defense this week, I'm sure, in film study and all that kind of stuff. They've had 2 weeks to prepare. So, like, how does that stuff, a lot of the situational football where Washington's been excellent all year, play against a team that also is very good at situational football? So, on the offensive side of it, for Detroit, the run game scares the bejesus out of me with what Washington has been this year. They, at times, have really battened down the hatches. Like, their second half against Saquon Barkley was about as good as anyone played Saquon Barkley all year. They also gave up 100-plus yards on 7 carries, including a 68-yard touchdown on the first 7 carries of that game. They've had stretches of good and bad within the same game. I think the run game for Detroit is enormous, because if it does get into a drop back game, like, obviously the risk goes up for the Lions. They're very good at that, but I just think the Detroit run game is probably going to be the dominant force here. Is that kind of what the conversation is up there this week?
Yeah, I think it starts with the ability to run the ball, and that's what sets up the play action that's so nice for the Detroit Lions and Jared Goff that works so well. Yeah, and I mentioned it earlier, Jahmyr Gibbs was fantastic the last couple of weeks on his own. The thing that makes the Lions so much fun, not only is the, and I think, you know, when I was younger, I think about Lendale White and Reggie Bush, right? They were thunder and lightning. People like to use, like, the Sonic and Knuckles. I'm still not sure that's exactly fair. I don't know who Knuckles is. I don't know who Sonic is, because I don't think they're as different as people think they are. I think Gibbs the last couple of weeks has shown he can create, he can run up the middle. He doesn't have to just be pressed outside and then speed to the corner. But what I love about them is they seem equally happy for each other as they are for themselves. And so there's never an issue with split. It doesn't matter who gets what. Now, the Lions, again, have been very balanced. But, you know, if you can set up the run consistently and then sit back at a home run to Jameson Williams twice,
right?
I mean, it's tough to beat. And that's one of the things that makes him so much fun is, you know, he only has to touch the ball a couple times and he changes the game completely.
The Commanders have actually been pretty good about limiting explosive plays this year. They haven't been great, and they've definitely given up some penalties, and they've definitely given up some, but I think as the year went on, they got better and better at it. Are the Lions a team that will be A, patient enough, and B, just, I guess, execute cleanly enough to maintain drives, or will they commit a holding penalty? Will Goff throw a couple wayward passes? Like, do they have the ruthless efficiency to be able to operate that way? My guess is very much yes, but this is also a team that has been as explosive as anybody, so I don't know how often they've actually had to do it.
It's a great question, and look, I love Jared Goff. I think he's the perfect fit for this team right now, and I don't think anybody would have said that 3 years ago other than maybe himself. But at times, you wonder where he goes. I mean, I'll go back to the Houston game, and they won this game, but
right,
5 picks. Now, before that and in between that, not a whole lot. But if you look back to last week, or 2 weeks ago now, I guess, he wasn't very clean against Minnesota either. And some of those opportunities, I mean, put them right into the red zone and they failed to capitalize. So I do think, for the most part, Detroit is ruthless enough to be able to maintain the drive. And some of it is their willingness to go for it on fourth down. That crowd, I mean, there was a critical penalty on Minnesota in the red zone on 4th and 1 in the fourth quarter. Gave the Lions a first down, and I mean, at that point, it was going to be very difficult for Minnesota to come back, and of course, they didn't. And then, of course, the other thing that they have is that you don't know what they're going to do to you. Who's going to throw a pass today? Who's going to catch a pass today? Those trick plays, as fun as they are lethal when they work. I know that, again, trick plays are, but I don't know how many trick plays the Lions have. It seems infinite, because at times,
yeah,
they'll pull them out against the Bears, and you think, why would you do that? And the answer was, well, that play was designed for the Bears. It wasn't for anybody else. So who knows what you'll get? And so I think those things combined, the efficiency of the run game, the willingness to go for it on fourth down, the craftiness. And then again, you know, when Jared Goff's on, I mean, he's had multiple games this season with no incompletions in the first half. What more can you ask from a quarterback? And the answer is absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I think the other thing that is terrifying for me on the Washington side of it is just the dominance of this offensive line. Like, they've gotten moved by a lot worse offensive lines than arguably the best in football. And their ability to just, like, I watching tape the other day, there was a run against Tampa. I was like, that was nice job, like good run fit. And I looked down, I was like, wait, that was a 6 yard gain? Because Bucky Irving just buried it in the back of the offensive line and ran for 6 yards. There was no hole. There was no nothing. The line of scrimmage just moved 6 yards. And like, Detroit is excellent at that. They move people. They sink double teams. They create crevices. And I think the stat that kind of embodies that is David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs are both top six in the NFL in success rate on their rushes. Like, these guys get it done consistently, not just for the big chunks, which we all know that Gibbs is capable of. And Montgomery's had his fair share as well. I think Gibbs is second in the NFL behind Barkley in EPA per rush, or maybe behind Henry. But like, his ability to break the big one is enormous. And so I think that's the thing. Like, Washington's a very physical group. They will hit, they play really hard, they fly around, there's a lot of speed, but they're just light up front. And I think that's the thing that, at the end of the day, like, one, from a pass rush standpoint, obviously Detroit's excellent. And if you keep Goff clean, like, he's very efficient. He can do that stuff. But the ability to literally just be like, oh, all right, incompletion for on first down, it's second and 10. We're going to move the line of scrimmage 6 yards and set up a third and four. And by the way, now we're in four down territory. Because last week against Tampa, like, there was a ton of third and sevens, ton of third and nines. And Dan Campbell's crazy, but he ain't going for it on fourth and nine at his own 35-yard line and in the first half. If on fourth and four, he might. And so I think that ability to keep things in third and long and then ultimately fourth and long, like, that's a huge key for, frankly, both sides. Because both coaches are going to be really aggressive on that front. And I don't trust Washington to be able to do that because of how proficient Detroit is in the run game.
Yeah, I mean, I think if this game goes the way a lot of people think it will, you'll have both punters on the bench making s'mores, right? I mean, you won't see too much of them. And that's one thing I love about the Redskins, too. And I mentioned earlier, the Cousins thing is their willingness to do the exact same thing. And you made such a good point there. And I think it's something that people overlook a little bit, even if not intentionally. It makes second down first down if you're willing to go for it on fourth down. Because most people, again, you punt after three. Well, if you're not going to punt after three, you get one more. And so it opens up your playbook in a dramatic way that I think is hard for most teams to contain. But I think for the Commanders, they will understand that because they're the same way. And I think that will make it somewhat challenging for the Lions. It's not often they find somebody as aggressive as they are. And the Washington Commanders are as aggressive as they are. And that should make for a fun matchup. I'm looking forward to that element of it.
For sure. Anything else that we want to hit on before we get out of here, Zach?
I don't think so. I mean, you mentioned special teams. I don't think there's anything too crazy right there.
No, I think just one interesting note on the Washington side of it. Like, Austin Ekeler just got named All-Pro second team kick returner. He's not returning kicks right now. He got hurt. His really bad concussion happened on a kick return. And Luke McCaffrey did a good job in his stead. They just stuck with Luke McCaffrey. Crowder did have a good punt return last week. So, you know, he's definitely a dangerous guy. Detroit's had some big special teams plays. I think the tone setting on special teams is the big thing. Like, they're going to hit the absolute mess out of each other. And if you don't like violent collisions, then don't watch punt coverage. Don't watch kick coverage in this game, because there's going to be some dudes flying around. All right. What's your guys' schedule for the rest of the week for more on the Lions side of this?
Yeah. So we had an episode drop yesterday with Doc Walker, like I mentioned. And then we should record later today as well. And then we'll be out Thursday morning. And then from there, we'll rock and roll until Saturday night. And then we record immediately afterwards. Well, I shouldn't say immediately, 2 hours afterwards. Look for the podcast at 4 a.m. on Sunday.
Yeah, we do an instant reaction show as well. I won't be at this game, which will make that a little bit easier for me. I can just go live right after the final whistle. Logan and I will have our film preview, our film inspired preview of the show. So if you're listening on the Detroit side of this and you want a guy who played 10 years in the NFL, watched a bunch of tape and said, this is what I think is important to the game, check out our Take Command preview on our side of it. That'll be out Thursday midday after we record it. And then I'll be live with my colleague at the Team 980, Kevin Sheehan. He's going to be our guest co-host this week for the Instant Reaction Show Saturday night, sometime around 11-ish Eastern, right after the final whistle. Zach, this was great, dude. Appreciate you doing this.
Oh, Craig, thanks so much, man. It's been an absolute blast, and I'm looking forward to a lot of fun on Saturday night.
Everyone, wherever you are watching or listening right now, whether it is the Detroit Football Network or Take Command, go ahead and hit that subscribe button, and we'll see you next time in our respective feeds. Thanks for listening to this production of Odyssey Sports.